Excuse me, pardon me, pardon me. Excuse me. I understand that you're sick, little boy. You're sick.
Yeah, I'm feeling really bad.
All right, shut up and I'm going to tell you a story, all right?
I
Shut up and
don't,
sit
I
down
just, I
and
think
tell this
I
story.
just want to take a nap. I'm just really.
Shut up.
Okay.
Listen to the story, all right?
Okay. Okay.
Okay, here we go. The Princess Bride. Once it was a guy who went through the forest and all of a sudden his pants fell off. And a princess went
Wait.
up and said, "My, what a gigantic cock you have." And
Hang on,
the
wait.
what? What is it?
Who are you? How'd you get in my room?
Shut up!
Have fun storming the castle!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Late Seating. I'm Jason Harding.
And I'm Steve Shives.
On this show, we take a classic movie and we see if it lives up to its reputation, whether that reputation is good or bad. And this time around, this movie has a great reputation despite it being a romantic comedy. Isn't that right, Steve?
That's right, because it's not just a romantic comedy, it's so many other things, isn't it?
Like what? You brought it
It's
up.
a
What else is it?
it's a well, it's a it's a comedy comedy.
Okay.
And it's a fairy tale spoof, sort of.
So a fairy tale comedy.
A fairy tale spoof comedy, romantically.
Okay.
The romance.
Why don't we just stick with romantic comedy? How about
okay, we'll just stick with romantic. Okay,
hooray! What romantic comedy are we going to be reviewing this time around, Steve?
It is that 1987 classic, everybody's favorite movie, apparently, The Princess Bride.
Hooray, The Princess Bride. Steve?
Yes.
Do you have any trivia for The
I
Princess
do
Bride?
have some trivia. Yeah.
Great. I'm going to take a nap.
I have. Okay, you take a nap and I'll tell
I'm
the people
sick.
About
By the
The
way,
Princess
everybody,
Bride.
I'm sick. So that's
Yeah.
why I'm taking a nap. Not because Steve bores me. It's because I'm sick. If it's good enough, I'll wake up.
I'll read my trivia to you like Peter Falk reads to Fred Savage in the movie.
Oh, yay. Huh? That'll be great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grandpa.
Okay.
I hate your rotten, stinking guts, Grandpa. How about that? You smell.
My favorite part is when he turns around and says, "There's just one more thing."
pardon me, excuse me. Just much one more thing. You said you were sick the entire time?
Exactly.
All right, come on, let's go. Let's go.
Okay,
on, let's
okay,
go.
Okay,
okay,
okay. So, not only is it many people in the audience's favorite movie, but several members of the cast consider this film to be their favorite work that they've ever done, including Mandy Patinkin.
I can see that for Cary Elwes.
Yeah, his filmography is not super. I mean, he's worked a lot.
He was great in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
His mustache was. I mean, the makeup department earned their pay in that one. That was a hell of a mustache. Anyway, so Mandy Patinkin says that it's his favorite movie that he's ever been in, and that Inigo is his favorite character. Also very pleased with the movie was Andre the Giant.
No, of course.
Though he had acted before this, mostly on TV, and of course probably Andre's most famous TV role was he played a Bigfoot on an episode
on
of the
$6 Million Man.
Yeah, and this was Andre's first, and as it turned out, only major role in a film.
Yeah,
and when asked during a behind the scenes interview what his favorite part of making the movie was, Andre said, "No one looks at me."
Mm-hmm.
Because throughout his life and career, you know, he was always like he was
the
Andre the
gigantic
Giant
man drinking a six pack
yeah.
of beer,
drinking wine by the case.
Who's the French giant in First Class? We've run out of alcohol.
So he liked it. He was just treated like a normal person, you know, on the movie set, and Andre had this thing. Throughout his life and throughout his wrestling career, where if he liked you, he would call you boss. That was how he sort of, you know, let you know that he approved of you. And reportedly, he called almost everyone on The Princess Bride boss.
That's
how people knew that he was
even inanimate objects.
Yeah, he's holding the rock, going, "Okay, boss."
I don't know what that is. He's French. I don't know why you're doing.
Going to throw the rock at him, boss. Well, if I was doing Andre's real voice, it would be because you can't.
He only gets really fucking word he says. You can't really understand what he's saying when he's on fire pretending to be the Dreadfire Robert.
He's got 80 teeth in his mouth. But anyway, I love Andre the Giant. I love Andre
the Giant. I know you
Giant.
Do, but you're...
I say these terrible things to him out of love.
Okay.
But anyway, and of course, I think a lot of people know this, that, you know, by the time he made this movie, this was 86, 87 when they were filming it. He died in 93. So this is toward the end of his life. And he had a lot of injuries. He had knee injuries and back injuries.
Yeah,
so
he was in a lot of pain.
He was in a lot of pain and he wasn't super mobile. So the shot at the end when Robin Wright jumps out of the window and Fezzik catches her, Robin Wright was on wires for that because Andre was not able to hold her weight on, you know, just by himself. That's how beat up and injured he was.
So just remember that next time you watch it and cry a little. Just be, that poor guy.
Think about just the constant pain that he's in.
You know what I'm constantly thinking about at the end of the movie? What fucking horse did he kill getting on top of it?
God, what horse is Andre the Giant riding?
He probably he was like strapped 400 one to pounds. Foot.
Like,
there's like, no way. There's no way a horse would allow it. It'd be like, fuck that.
I'm like, there go our three heroes and Andre's stunt double.
Horses are stupid. Horses are crazy. They're not stupid or crazy enough to allow a man that size to get on top of their back.
The horse would spontaneously develop like a Mr. Ed voice and turn to the director and go, ain't no fucking way.
All right, keep going. What else?
Where do you think you're going? Okay. William Goldman based the Dread Pirate Roberts on a real life pirate, Black Bart, whose real name was Bartholomew Roberts. How about that? Billy Crystal freely improvised during the shooting of his scene as Miracle Max. The rest of the crew and cast found him so funny that director Rob Reiner and star Cary Elwes had to leave the set because they were ruining so many takes. Rob Reiner watched the filming from another room on a monitor, and Cary Elwes, who is mostly dead in the scene anyway, was replaced by a dummy. Mandy Patinkin had to remain because Inigo has lines in the scene.
Yes, he
and
does.
Later, Mandy Patinkin claimed that the only injury he sustained during the shoot was a bruised rib from straining too hard to hold back a laugh during the Miracle Max scene. So, the sword fight between Inigo and the Man in Black was performed entirely by Mandy Patinkin and Cary Elwes.
That's right. Both left-handed and right-handed.
Yeah, absolutely. And they rehearsed for months to get it right. The only shot in which a stunt double is used is when the Man in Black does the swing from the bar and does the somersault, lands to pick up his sword, which you can tell because they cut to a different shot.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first version, they rehearsed the sword fight for, you know, the longest time, and they had it down just perfect. And they showed it to Rob Reiner, and Rob Reiner said, it's too short. So they had to go back and come up with more stuff to do and lengthen this sword fight that they had been practicing already for months. Cause I think their original version of it at full speed it took them about a minute. And the fight in the movie lasts about 3 minutes altogether. So they had to, they had to come up with some new shit. And finally, the original novel written by William Goldman is presented as the good parts version of a much longer book. And the conceit is that William Goldman's father read this book to him as a child and would skip past all the boring stuff. So the version that William Goldman is publishing is an edited, abridged version designed to recreate the experience he had when his father read it to him as a child. Now, that's all
What's
bullshit.
What's the truth? Thank you.
That's all bullshit. Despite
is there an S. Morgan Stern?
No, that there is no S. Now a lot, but that's the thing. That's what my trivia is about. A lot of people, even though when you read the book, it seems obvious, like this is all fiction. All of this is fiction. There is no other book called The Princess Bride that has, you know, like there is no unabridged version.
Yep.
William Goldman made the whole thing up. It's his book. He wrote all of it. But Goldman nonetheless would for years, especially after the movie came out and then the book got like a boost in popularity, people would write to him or would, you know, if he made appearances or whatever, and they would ask him, how can they find the unabridged version of The Princess Bride, which does not exist. William Goldman made it up.
My turn.
So that's it. Yeah. Your turn.
Hooray, my turn. It was directed by Rob Reiner. You know him. He's made other movies. Not lately. I don't think he's made a movie lately. Has he?
I don't think so. I feel like
He
it's been a
probably
while.
has, but it's been a while. But I mean, he did things like Misery, and he did things like Stand By Me, and he did things like This Is Spinal Tap. And I kept getting these mixed up. He did Stand By Me before he did this movie.
Yeah, like right before.
Yeah. Screenplay by William Goldman, the same guy who wrote the book. And that book is The Princess Bride, S. Morgenstern's classic tale of true love and high adventure, the good parts version by William Goldman. He wrote the whole thing. The whole book is a joke. The book is a joke. It's a satire. It was produced by Andrew Schmaemann. I didn't look up anything. Sorry, Andrew. Fuck off. And Rob Reiner. I already explained to you what he's done. Starring Fred Savage as the grandson, and you know him from The Wonder Years and whatever he's doing now. I think he's a Bob's Big Boy model. That's what I think. He goes to conventions holding up a hamburger.
Yep, that was
Yep,
me.
that was me. Aren't you the guy from Wonder Years? Don't make me
Bob's
cry
big
now.
boy.
I'm Bob's Big Boy.
Oh, the Wonder Years, you mean that hit show that I didn't save any money from?
No, my co-star did not grow up to become the lead singer for Marilyn Manson.
You can look him up.
God, I wish that was true. I so wish that was true. But it's not.
That Paul grew up to be Marilyn
Paul grew up to be
Manson.
Marilyn Manson, yeah. Peter Falk as Grandpa. You know him from Columbo. Betsy Brantley as the mother, and she's done TV and movies and crap. Who cares? Cary Elwes as Wesley, and you know him from Saw and Twister and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That's
And
right. And a bunch of other
that's
movies that aren't as good as this one.
Robin Wright as Buttercup, and you know her from Forrest Gump and House of Cards. And I think she was in Blade Runner. Wasn't she in Blade Runner? She played
Was
Blade
she?
Runner's boss. What's her name?
Blade Runner's boss.
Curtis' name isn't even Blade Runner. I don't remember what his name is. What's Blade Runner's name in Blade Runner 2047? It's
Oh shit, I
I'm
can't
just
think
gonna
of
say his name's Goober Grape, and he's, the
Goober
replicant
Grape.
guy.
Yeah.
Mandy Patinkin. Can't
Yeah.
he just buy a real name, Mandy Patinkin, as Inigo Montoya, and you know him from movies like Alien Nation, and he's done a bunch of TV stuff. He was in Chicago. Was it Chicago Hope? Was that a
Chicago Hope. Yeah.
Chicago blah
Chicago
blah.
Hope for the first season when it was good, and then he left and went
That's right. He said, "Fuck this." Chris Sarandon
shit.
is Prince Humperdinck, and you know him from Fright Night. He was married to Susan Sarandon from the 1960s until the end of the 1970s.
Wow.
Why did
You
he get to do
you
that?
fu you fucked that up, didn't you, Chris?
Why did he get to do that? Why did yeah, well, I
Why
mean, she got married. She, I mean, look
did
at his most famous role is in Fright Night and this, and also as Jack Skellington's voice. So, I mean, that's,
Yes.
Christopher Guest is Count Tyrone Ruggan, and you know him from Waiting for Guffman and A Mighty Wind and Best in Show and
Yeah.
This Is Spinal Tap. And what else has he been in? Hasn't been in much lately, has he?
No, I
He's
feel like
just,
he's probably enjoying his well-earned retirement at this point.
yeah. And he got
You know?
what? What'd you say?
Nothing.
And he's married to an Academy Award winner now.
Who's he married
Is
to?
you don't know who he's married to?
I'm not off the top of my head.
I'm leaving it. Then fine, fuck you. I'm not telling you. I'm not telling you. I'm
I'm
not
looking it
telling
up
you
right
who he's
now.
married. Oh, fine. Look it up. I don't care.
I'm gonna look it
You
up right now since you're
use the internet to save you again, Steve.
Oh, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Ah, yes. You
Hey.
didn't know that?
I know I maybe I did, but I don't remember. I don't remember who
When
what
I
he.
found out that she won, I looked up her speech. And one of the nice things about her speech is that she thanked everyone who has been following her career. She thanked the fans of the stuff that she's been in. Like, so
Yeah.
she's been in a lot of Friday the 13th stuff.
Yeah.
She thanked them
Halloween, yeah.
specifically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was nice, but she kissed her
Yeah.
husband. Her husband's sitting right there going, I used to work. And now my wife is an Academy Award winner. Wow.
I used to work.
Used to work. Wallace Shawn as Vizzini, and you know him from My Dinner as with Andre and Deep Space Nine and a whole bunch of other stuff. Vanya in New York is, I think, one of my favorite things that he's been in. Mm-hmm. Andre the Giant is Fezzik. And Steve stole the materials, so fuck it. I don't even know. What do I care? I'll let him have it. He's been a fan of Andre the Giant much longer than I have.
That's right. Right.
That's right. But he's French. He's gigantic. He was in a lot of pain. We covered that.
And he really main event of Mania 3 versus Hulk Hogan.
Oh, God.
And lost, but, you know.
Peter Cook is the Empuethev clergyman. And
Mowage.
Everyone knows Peter Cook specifically from this. Most people only know Peter Cook from this and not about his long history of British comedy, which, you know, he never really made it big in the United States, unlike his partner, who went, I know how to play a drunk, and I'm going to play him over and over and over again. And if I have to tell you who it is, don't. I'm not telling you who it is. Do you want to tell him
who it is? Who his partner is?
Yeah.
This is the guy who played okay, a drunk man in the 1980s.
People don't know by that incredibly
excuse me,
accurate,
sir! No, it's Dudley Moore.
It's Dudley Moore, that's right.
He played Arthur and won an Oscar for it, and then he made Arthur 2 and no one cared.
Mel Smith as the albino. And he's also another British character actor comedian that did a lot of work in British TV. But he's not that well known here. Carol Kane is Valerie. You know who Carol Kane is. I'm not going to insult you. She's Latka's girlfriend in Taxi. She's grandma from the Addams Family movies. She's been
the Addams Family.
You know who she is. Stop it. Billy Crystal as Miracle Max. He's just some comedian. Marjorie Mason as the ancient booer. The woman who's like, boo!
Boo! Boo.
She was
Queen of Film.
This is what I know her better as. You can't have your pudding if you don't eat your meat.
Yeah.
So she got two of them. That's from Pink Floyd's The Wall. She's the wife that is haranguing the school teacher about finishing his food. So that's what I know her from. Malcolm Story as Yellen, a bunch of British stuff. Willoughby Gray as the king, also British stuff. I don't know. He's great in the 5 seconds that we see of him. He's great. Cinematography by Adrian Biddle. He did Aliens and a whole bunch of other movies. Edited by Robert Lighton, Bull Durham. Music by Mark Knopfler. Yeah, you know who you think of whenever you think of soundtracks. You think of Mark Knopfler from the Dire Straits.
From Dire Straits.
He's also done some other movies like Local Hero. Out of everything that I really love about this, I fucking hate the soundtrack. It literally sounds like someone just had bought him a Casio keyboard for children. And they said, do it. Make the music for it.
It's the only part of the movie I have consistently not liked every time I've watched it.
Yeah. And it sticks. It's like a thorn in your mind. Every time you hear it, it's like, ugh. Production companies Act 3 Communications and Buttercup Films, distributed by 20th Century Fox and Interactus Film Distribution. That's internationally. Release date September 25th, 1987. Running time 98 minutes. Budget $16 million. Adjusted for inflation $43.4 million. Box office $30.9 million or adjusted for inflation $83.8 million. And it was a huge hit and everyone loved it. Right, Steve?
That's why they did The Princess Bride 2 and 3.
No, thank God. No, it's so serious.
I know.
All right, Steve, let's get dressed up like old-timey medieval people. I know how much love it.
I know how much you love it.
And let's you and me chase after these three scoundrels that have stolen the princess and run into the world, whichever world it is, because there's made-up countries and real countries. I mean, let's face it, Vizzini is supposed to be Sicilian. So let's run into the world of the Princess Bride. Steve, take it away.
Oh, boy. Well, before we get into that world, we get a little...
I think it's ironic that I'm sick and it starts with a sick kid.
It starts with a sick kid. He's home. He's homesick from school, and he's in bed, and his mom is like, you know, putting her hand on his forehead as if that does a fucking thing. But mothers always do that. And
so
she's
do
like,
dads,
well, I have
an asshole. So do dads. When I walk into the room and go, then you touch their forehead. And if they're hot, then you go get a thermometer.
My dad never touched me for any reason.
Your father never touched you at all, period, full stop.
No, he never spoke my name. But
he saw you lying on the ground twitching and bleeding. And he said, I'm going to go get somebody. I'm going to go get someone, Steve.
I'm going to go get somebody. And then he never came back.
Went into the living room, grabbed a beer, and just stared at nothing.
He just sat down and watched a John Wayne movie.
John Wayne talked to him. That's right. You don't get too involved.
That's how you're going to raise a real man. You don't coddle him like a pansy.
It confirms you're gay, even if it's your son. What?
You know, that sounds like one of John Wayne's actual opinions.
Don't touch another man, even if they're dying.
Even if it's your own child and they're desperate for any kind of affection and approval.
That's right.
Anyway, so the kid is sick in bed, and his mom says, I have a surprise for you, honey.
He's playing baseball on his Nintendo.
Oh, you know what? He's playing my favorite baseball video game ever, Hardball.
Okay.
Yeah, I had that on my Commodore 64. I wasted many hours.
Many
of my
years. You said
hardball.
It. You said it. Many years.
Many years.
My father not touching me. In fact, hiding from me in his room.
Well, might as well play video games.
So the ghost of John Wayne is standing there going, you can't feel love for another man, even if it's your son. Why?
The Bible says it's an abomination.
Jesus and I will throw you out of heaven when you're dead.
Jesus and I. John Wayne and Jesus are both guarding heaven. So mom says, I got a surprise for you. And the door bursts open and in steps his grandpa.
Crinkling with his diaper. Please just let him come in and talk to you just for a little bit. He's been so alone as his grandma disappeared. So we just need to... He doesn't cook for himself. I've seen his house. Jesus Christ. We're going to have to burn it down and he's going to be moving in. Also, by the way, there's a terrifying Santa Claus on the wall behind you. I don't understand why it's there. I don't think this is a Christmas movie. But anyway.
It doesn't seem to be.
He wants to come in and do something with a book, okay?
Yeah.
He's like, well, fine, Mom. I'll tolerate his presence.
I'll tolerate the presence of this old man who clearly loves me very much.
Whatever. He smells like farts in a pillow. Just will you let him in? Okay. And he comes in. He's like, hey, how you doing? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to read a book at you. No!
Not books. Anything
Not
but
a
books.
Book. Oh my God, please. Is there a video you can play? God damn it.
Other people are watching the video right now.
This constitutes child abuse in this country now. You can't do it.
You can't read to me. The Republicans are in charge. You can't read to me.
And he's like, no, there's tits and blood in this. All right, maybe.
All right.
All right.
I'll allow it.
Let's watch it. I won't read the novelization of I Spit on Your Grave, so this better be good.
Peter David wrote that. It's excellent.
By the way, do you think there is a novelization of I Spit on Your Grave?
I hope there is.
I'm going to look it up.
Now I hope there is. I don't think so, but I really hope there is.
Oh, God, you said it.
And I hope Peter David did write it.
Oh, God. Oh, God. No. I don't think it's based on the... Okay, there's I Spit on Your Graves, plural. That's a crime.
That's a crime novel.
See?
That's a legally distinct project.
It's not I Spit on Your Grave, singular.
Mm-mm. There you go. It's more ambitious. It's more ambitious.
All right. So anyway, he says, I'm going to read you this book, so shut your fucking mouth, you lousy kid. Right?
Yeah, and he starts to read, and it's The Princess Bride, and it's a fairy tale.
And it's about this woman who has the stupidest fucking name ever given to a woman ever. What name is that, Steve?
Her parents clearly hated her, and that's why they named her Buttercup.
And what is a buttercup, Steve?
It's a little flower. It's a little yellow flower.
Now, what is a buttercup? Is it a cup of butter?
A cup that you put butter in, presumably.
Morning, dear. Here's your cup of butter.
Here's your cup of butter. Drink it down. Got to get to work.
Take all of it. Anyway, yes. And so she's in love. She's in love with the stable boy.
With a farm boy who she abuses constantly by ordering him around.
That's right.
But he's got the hots
for her. Farm boy,
come
over here and pick up this thing I dropped. No, slower. Okay. Now, your belt came off. How did that happen? You do what I say, or I'll scream and you're going to get killed.
And of course, this is the basis for a healthy and loving relationship.
That's right. She's like, farm boy, do this, farm boy, do this. And what does he say every time he asks her to do something?
As you wish.
As you wish. And that makes her orgasm standing there while he stares at him. They're in love.
They love each other.
They start kissing.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the farm boy ain't got no money. So he says, I'm going to go off to sea to seek my fortune. And then he leaves and he never comes back.
Because she gets a message that said the Dread Pirate Roberts has killed him. And she says, I'm never going to love again. But then later, the prince announces, hey, guess what?
I'm getting married.
It's Prince Humperdinck. He comes out and he goes, guess what? I'm getting married. I'm getting married to this girl who's not royalty. How about that? Isn't that great? Isn't that great?
Do you like me now?
Please like me. I'm Prince Humperdinck. I'm sorry, he's got the stupidest goddamn name.
Yeah.
And, but then she rides off and she runs afoul of a couple of brigands.
Oh, yes. A trio of highwaymen.
That's right. One can't speak. And the other one is Spanish. And they're like, and the third one. And the third one is Wallace Shawn.
He's the leader.
He's the least Sicilian man you've ever seen in your entire life.
He's from Sicily.
That's
just
right.
Go with us on this.
And they knock her on the head and they get her on a boat. And they're like, ha-ha, we're stealing her for undisclosed
to start
reasons.
A war. We're gonna frame the enemy nation of Gildor. And then when the Prince of Florin thinks that Gildor is one who stole his bride to be, then it'll start a war between the two countries, which is something I want for reasons that I will not specify.
And he yells at his two guys that he's hired to help do this, a giant by the name of Fezzik and the Spaniard by the name of Inigo Montoya, right?
Yeah.
And he says, I didn't hire you to think I'm a genius. Everyone shut up. And if you start rhyming again, I'll kill you somehow. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I will kill both of you. And then they start rhyming. And they say things like, what, Steve? I'll be Fezzik. You do it. You do Inigo Montoya. I'll be Fezzik.
Oh, he's very, very short on charm.
No, that's his. They're doing
Fezzik. I hope it doesn't come to any harm.
Maybe he should go live on a farm.
He is terribly afflicted with weedness.
With what?
I
hope he sucks on my penis.
There you go. You gotta, you know.
Tearing this movie apart. Okay, anyway, they sail off on a boat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're crossing an undisclosed body of water where there are shrieking eels.
That's right.
She tries to get away, and she jumps in the water, and he's like, you hear that, Highness?
Those are the shrieking eels.
They get louder right before they eat human flesh. And then we interrupt to remind you that this is a story being told by a grandpa to a grandson. And he's like, you look like you're about to pee your pants. Do you want me to stop? Do you need to go pee? Because it looks like pee's going to come if I keep talking. He's like, no, grandpa, why? No, I'm perfectly fine. I don't need any of that. Who's been talking? Who talked to you? Who told you about that?
who told you those lies? Those lies.
I thought it was funny because most kids don't pee their pants while watching The Grinch That Stole Christmas. I was like, it's you know, until the redemption.
It was sweat.
It was sweat. That's what it was. I spilled my water. Stop it.
Where's grandma? What did you do with her?
No, I like to watch the Nightmare Before Christmas, and I like to drink my Christmas Eve warm water, and that's and I spilled it. Oh, grandma did tell you, did she? Oh, good thing she's dead. Anyway, she gets saved. Fezzik hits the eel on top of the head, but that's when they notice the boat coming.
There's a boat behind him. Yeah,
that's right. It's a boat. And I'm like, no, boat. They're not going to catch up to it because now we found the Cliffs of Insanity. And they only look like the Cliffs of Mild Neuropathy. Nothing really bad.
Yeah, they're not like insane.
But everybody jumps onto fucking Fezzik, who has to climb the rope by himself with all these right. people hanging off of him. And as right. they're getting up there, they see a guy in black climbing up the rope. And they're like, no. So they get up to the top. And the Sicilian goes, okay, all right, Sortie, you stay here. Oh, they cut the rope. They cut the rope.
They cut the rope. He hangs the rope,
and then they see he's hanging on the cliff. And he turns to Inigo Montoya and he says, Inigo Montoya, I want you to stay here and I want you to kill him as soon as he gets up to the top of the cliff. And he goes, okay. And then Fezzik and the Sicilian and Buttercup run off or go off. And he's out of there and he says, it looks like it's really tough. And the Dread Pirate, what we find out is the Dread Pirate Robert says, yeah, fuck off. Stop it. Leave me alone. Up yours, asshole. This is bad. This is terrible. And then Neo goes, I swear on the soul of my dead father that you will make it up here alive. And he goes, okay, throw me the rope. And he throws him the rope. He climbs up. He lets him get a couple of minutes to catch his breath, which is very nice. And then we get his backstory through exposition. What's his backstory, Steve?
His backstory is that his father was a sword maker, and right. a man with six fingers on his right hand.
That's right.
Bought a sword from his father, and then he didn't want to pay for it. So his father refused to give him the sword. So the six fingered man killed his father,
and sliced up
Inigo's face, put scars right. on both his cheeks, and then left him there. So Inigo spent the rest of his life studying and training to be the world's greatest swordsman, so that one day when he encounters the six fingered man again, he can take revenge for the death of his father, and he will say to the six fingered man, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
That's great.
And then the six fingered man will run away.
That's right. That's exactly what happens.
That's
anyway.
That's what's
then
happen.
they have a sword fight, in which you're very good. Oh no, you're very good. And there's it turns out I only fight with because here's the thing, guys. There's no fucking such thing as fighting with your left hand when it comes to sword fighting. Okay, just stop it. Just knock it off. Here's what happens with people who fight with a left hand against a right hand fighter. They fucking die. How about that? They just fucking die.
They die.
How about that? So there's no such thing as, yes, were there people who wanted to fight with a left hand? Yes. Did they stay alive very long? No, they did not. They'd have to be extraordinarily good. You are in a world of right-handed fighters. So first they're both fighting with the left hand, then they switch over to the right hand, ha ha ha, and then they fight and right. they fight and they fight, and then finally the guy in black says, knocks his sword out of his hand, and he said, I'd rather smash a stained glass window than kill a man such as yourself. I'm a nice guy, bonk, and he bonks him on the head.
Yep.
And he runs off. Now we're back with Fezzik and
Vizzini.
Vizzini. And he's like, I can't believe. No, that's not what he says. He says, wow. No, that's not what he says either. He says, inconceivable.
Unfathomable.
Beyond belief.
Ripley's your fiction.
Ripley's, believe it or not. He sees the guy running towards him, and he tells Fezzik, I want you to stay here. I want you to grab and kill him. And kill him your way. And he says, what's my way? And he says, you pick up a rock, and you hurl it at his head, and you kill it.
And Fezzik says, my way is not very sportsmanlike.
No, it's not. And he gets up there, and he misses on purpose. And he tells him he misses on purpose. And he says, let's wrestle without any weapons. And he's like, okay, fine. And then he gets on his back and he chokeholds him for days until he passes out.
Yes.
And he doesn't kill Fezzik either. He tells him,
no,
have big old porno dreams with gigantic women, which is a huge assumption. Maybe he likes tiny women.
Maybe he likes petite girls. You don't know.
Or boys. Or large men.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe he's gay.
That's right. How dare he?
Maybe he's anyway. Ace. You don't know.
But he runs off, and then he runs up. Okay, so now this is when we go. I'm not going to do this every time, but we cut back to Prince Humperdinck. Yeah, who's like, who's on the trail. not suspicious. Oh, she's been stolen this and that. We're going to have to catch her before Gilda does whatever. And I'm not trying to start a war. Let's go. And he does it several times.
Yeah.
So he runs up, and he runs up to Fizzini, who's reenacting my dinner with Andre, but with Buttercup. He's set up a little table.
Yes, he's got a little table.
And he's like, you bested my giant, which means you're very strong. You bested my swordsman. You're highly skilled. So we're going to have a battle of wits. And he goes, okay. And he takes two wine. He gets two goblets of wine. And he says, this is Iocane powder. I just made it up. It's not real. And then don't look for it. And turns his back and he says, there, I put poison in both goblets. No, he doesn't say that. He
says, oh, okay, shit, I gave it away. No, I didn't.
Now, you must choose which goblet has the poison. And when you're done, we both drink and we see who wins and who's dead. And the Sicilian, this is maybe my favorite monologue ever. As he just goes on and on about why he can't choose the one in front of him, rather choose the one behind him.
He thinks it and overthinks it again. Yeah.
And then finally he says, my God, what is that? And he looks behind him and he switches the goblets and he goes, oh, well, let's drink. And they drink. And he says, I got you. And Vizzini says, oh, no, you didn't. I switched the goblets when you weren't looking. You overlooked the most important thing.
The most important thing is
never get involved in a land war.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia.
In Asia. And the second thing is, never bet with a Sicilian when life is on the line.
When death is on the line,
death is on the line, and then he laughs, and then he dies.
Yep.
And Princess Buttercup, what was that shit all about? And he says, oh, I put poison in both goblets. I've been developing a tolerance to Iocane powder. And she's like, go. And then we cut more to the prince, who's like, I'm following a trail. And they cut back to them. And she's upset because she's figured out that he's a Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah. And she thinks that he killed Wesley.
That's right. And he says, I did kill Wesley. Boy, he was fun to kill. I wish I could kill him again. You know why? Because he didn't have to find out how much of a fucking whore the woman that he loves is. And she's like, I'm not a whore. I loved him forever. Oh, yeah. Then why are you marrying the Prince Humperdinck? I don't love him. In fact, there's no adequate reason for me to be marrying him. It's not like I'm helping the kingdom at all. And I don't love him. Why am I marrying him?
What is the deal here?
What is going on? And anyway, so they're fighting back and forth. She tells him that the day he died, she died. He goes, yeah, whatever, bitch.
I'm bitter.
Then they see Prince Humperdinck, and she says, in fact, I want you to die too. And she hits him with a log, doesn't she?
Off the hill. She hits him with and knocks him down a hill. Yeah.
And as he's falling, what does he say?
As you wish.
Not this isn't going the way I planned. Or
Oh,
my neck is broken. But she goes, oh, my Wesley, and she jumps off the hill and they're rolling back down. And if you can ignore the fact that both of them were played by the same man in the stunt work.
You're not supposed to notice that.
I noticed. They get down to the bottom and they start kissing. And she's like, why didn't you? And he's like, we got to go into the fire swamps.
Yeah, to get away from your pig fiance.
That's right. And I had exposition to give. And then the fire swamps. And every once in a while, a jet of fire comes out of the ground. And he says, so what happened was I got captured by the Dread Pirate Roberts. And the Dread Pirate Roberts says, I'm going to kill you. And he never did it. And then eventually he told me that he's not really the Dread Pirate Roberts, that it's actually just a name that's passed down. Dread Pirate Roberts to Dread Pirate Roberts. And the guy who captured him is retired. And his name was, I don't know, Kermit. And he's now, when he retires, he's going to give the name to somebody else. And we're like, oh, okay. And that's why he's been gone for 5 years.
That's right. He's been out dread pirating.
That's right. Instead of writing at least one letter to Buttercup saying, Dear Buttercup, I'm still alive. Don't worry about me.
I'm still alive.
I'll be, I'll be fine. I'll be home soon with lots of money. Love, Wesley. Nope.
Doesn't do that.
But then they sink into the lightning sands. And then they climb out of the lightning sands. Whew. And then she's worried, but he's saying it'll be fine while giant men dressed as rats run.
Yes, the rat rodents of unusual size.
Of unusual size. And he says, I don't think they're real. And then they get attacked by one. And then the rodent bites him. And then she burns him. No, does she burn him? No.
He burns him.
Oh, that's right. He rolls him onto the thing.
He rolls
and
over.
And then he stabs him three times. It takes a really long time for this damn thing to die.
Yeah. It's a big fucking rat, you know.
When they make their ways out of the fire swamps, and oh no, they meet Prince Humperdinck. And they're going to fight because of stuff. And she goes, please don't. If you leave him alive, I'll come with you and I'll get married to you again. And he's like, okay, I promise. Wait, can I do it again? I'm gonna try. Okay, wait. I promise he'll live. All right, yeah. Okay, believe me, you stupid bitch. Get on my horse. We're gonna ride away. And they ride away. And what's his name? Ruben? No, Ruben. It's Rugen. Rugen. Because Wesley knows better.
Yeah.
He says, we're men of action, so there's no need to lie to me. And he says, good, because I'm going to torture you so much. Oh, boy, oh, boy. And that's when he notices that Rugen has six fingers on his hand. And he goes, hey, freak, look at that. You got six fingers on your hand, like some fucking inbred puppy. How about that? You're like a weird cat. You're like a weird cat that you named Thumbs because it has an extra digit on its paw.
You're the weird cat of people.
My aunt did have a cat that had six and had like that weird thing they called her
Thumbs. Oh,
they
called
the cat Thumbs. Here comes Thumbs. Yeah. Could you imagine if we did that to our children? Oh, yeah. Look.
Why are you named them after a random deformity?
Look, split face. Stop it. I was born with it. It got fixed.
I have a cleft palate.
Cleft palate. Stop it. You're still split face. Split face Jones. How about that? No.
That's your legal name. That's on your birth certificate.
How about you, Tyrannosaurus boy? I can't help it. My arms have been just short. Who made up this fucking law that we had to do this?
Why is everyone so fucking cruel?
Why? At least the people who have like mental conditions from birth, some of them will get names like Happy Johnny, you know, because they're always happy.
Sure, it's just a little condescending.
Happy Johnny.
It's Happy Johnny.
You happy now, Johnny? Smack. Stop it.
It's dehumanizing in a sweet way.
He went full reason. Shut up. Shut up.
He's Happy Johnny.
Okay, so then... Oh, God. Do we cut to... We cut back to the castle. And they're like, we gotta get worried because whatchamacallit, the other country, Florin? No, that's us. What's Gilder. The other one? Gilder. Gilder's gonna come, so we're gonna throw as many guards in the front, we're gonna lock everybody up, we're gonna do stuff.
We're doing war stuff, everybody. We're getting ready to do war stuff.
Just in case, because I gotta get married to her or something. Meanwhile, Fezzik. Oh, that's when they have to make a brute squad,
and he's part of the brute squad to clear out the forest, to clear all the riffraff out of the forest.
Yeah. And he finds Inigo, and he's drunk, and then he wakes up Inigo. And why do they go looking for the man in black?
Well, Fezzik,
because somehow Fezzik knows that the six-fingered man.
Fezzik knows all about the six-finger, but I guess because Count Rugen hired him, they don't really show that, but you just sort of have, you take it for granted because we need to move the story along.
Right.
That Fezzik has found out a bunch of exposition that we also know, and he tells...
I was eating mushrooms in the forest, and the frog told me that Rugen has six fingers on his hand.
Yeah, so Inigo is like, okay, well, since we know where the six-fingered man is now, I'm going to go kill him. But there's too many guards at the castle, so we need to go find the man in black who beat me in the sword fight so mm-hmm. that he can help us. Because if he defeated you in a wrestling match and he defeated me in a sword fight, then truly, you know, he's who we want on our side for me to get my revenge.
Meanwhile, Count Rugen is torturing Wesley, and he's connected him up to something called the machine. And what the machine does is it sucks out life.
Yeah, with suction cups.
That's right. And he sucked out a year of his life. And he's, boy, I can't wait for him to die, because he needs to die. He's a bad man. And he's got an albino sidekick who actually doesn't really like what he does.
No, it's just a job. You can tell. It's just a job.
Then while they're walking through the village, they hear the screaming of the man because, okay, so here's what happened. Prince Humperdinck finds out that Princess Mononoke loves whatever his name is, Wesley, and that there's nothing they can do. And he gets upset and he runs down there and he says, "You're never going to have her." And I mean, and he sets it to what, 60? I can't remember.
50, whatever the top level was. Yeah.
Top level is, and he turns it on because even Rugen has never done more than 5 years.
Right.
But he does 60 and he just turns it on and sucks all the life out of him. And then Fezzik and Inigo are in the forest looking for something. But they like, well, I don't know what they're looking for.
They hear the scream, and Inigo jumps to the conclusion that it's the man in black. Yes, again, there's really no way he could.
He's in torment because of his. Yeah, whatever.
Because of his love, he's lost his love, and only the man in black could be screaming like that. Okay, sure, let's go with that. And he asks his father's spirit to guide his sword.
Yeah, and Obi-Wan shows up and goes, "What? No, wrong. No, this is wrong. Goodbye,
use
everyone.
Use the force. You wait a minute. No, you're a Spaniard. I don't help Spaniards."
That's right. Valeria from Conan shows up in her fucking goddess gear. What? No,
no, not you either.
No, go away.
Anyway, he uses his sword like a dowsing rod, and
Osric from Dragon Slayer pops in. What? Oh no, not again!
Not this again.
There's no. I'll kill this giant for you if that's what you want. But he follows it like a divining rod, and it sticks in a tree.
Yeah, and it's the tree that is the entrance to the well of despair, which is where Wesley is. Yeah,
that's right. The pit of despair.
The pit of despair. Yeah.
And then it opens up, and thankfully they stop showing them going into the tree just before they can show clearly that there's no way under the giant is fitting through that goddamn door.
Fezzik ain't getting in that way. He's I don't know how in. He got in.
He's not. He's going to rip the tree
and
down.
Inigo ran around and let him in the back. He didn't go down that way.
They find him, and he's dead, but they're going to take him to Miracle Max. Because Miracle Max can do miracles, I guess. I don't know.
It's in his name.
Okay. And meanwhile, Princess Buttercup still thinks that he's alive. Oh, no. Remember, Princess Pumpadink said, "I'm going to send out everybody and they're going to go find him." Right?
Yeah.
And I can't remember. What happens? Oh, the kid breaks in every once in a while to say, "Grandpa, you're telling the fucking story wrong. Shut the fuck up. I don't like it."
Yeah, after when Wesley dies.
After Wesley dies, and then they announce that Princess Mononoke is alive. He goes, "No, Grandpa, you're telling her wrong. Stop it. I'm going to pee the bed again." He's like, "No. Are you going to let me read the fucking story? I spent my entire day here. I could have been playing bingo and trying to hit on Mrs. Mosley, whose husband died 2 weeks ago. She's jammed up, and I'm the only person that can unjam her. Do you understand what I'm saying?" I'm looking at a night of tapioca pudding and some meh, 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 meh. You know what I mean? Some yubbity, yubbity. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean?
It'll be like World War II all over again, except I won't have to worry about your grandmother finding out just how fucking unfaithful I was in every goddamn town and village from Italy all the way to Germany.
How unfaithful I was while I was saving the world from Nazis.
Let me put it this way. You got a lot of uncles and aunts that you know nothing about, okay? But you're going to shut up and you're going to let me tell the story. And what it turns out is that it was just a bad dream. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Buttercup has a dream that she got married and it never happened.
Meanwhile, they take him to Miracle Max, who is a whimsical Jewish man somehow in the middle of Gilda.
Yep.
Who's played by
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal. And he says, no, he's not all the way dead. He's mostly dead. And then when he finds out that this will take revenge on Prince Humperdinck, who'd fired him, that he agrees to do it. So they make a gigantic fucking pill. That is, I mean, just literally, there's no way he's swallowing this.
No, it's like a horse pill. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
He gets in an argument with his wife because at first he won't do it. And then when he finds out it's true love, he pretends it's not true love. And his wife comes out and says, I'm not sleeping with you until you help them. And he goes, okay, fine. And then he makes the pill. And then they say, okay, he's taking the pill. It takes a half hour to reach full potency. They get to the wall and he's kind of awake. I mean, yeah. he's really not all there. And he's like this almost all the way to the end of the movie. So don't think he's going to bounce back anytime soon.
Yeah.
Where he's really
he can't really move. His
body. Yeah. And he's like, if only we had a dead cat, maybe we'd have something. And Fezzik's like, I found this in my ass crack. And he's like, oh, goody. And if only we had a Holocaust cloak. I stole this from the old man. Great. That's awesome. I wish we had five holes in a goldfish. I found this in my backpack. You're getting strange. Okay. If only we had a pink goat that could yodel. Yodel, hoo-hoo. No.
How oh my God.
Possible? How is it everything I say we need? You have Fezzik. I don't know. I just have them. I'm literally making things up that don't exist. I wish I had a cup full of hope. Oh my God.
Wow, is this even a thing?
Maybe if we all drink it, we'll feel like we can get away with this. Anyway, so what they need a wheelbarrow, and he also happens to have that.
Yeah.
And so they put under the giant on a wheelbarrow, put the Holocaust cloak on him, and then set him on fire. And that's when he comes out, and this is the only time that I don't understand a fucking word he said. Not for years and years. He was like, dead brother. You're like, oh,
there will be
man.
No survivors.
The poor mute man has been set on fire.
Yeah. Oh, like what? Somebody put him out.
Someone help him. But he scares away everybody except the guy with the key. I love this scene. Key. He goes, where's the key? And he says, I do not have a key. And he says, okay, Fezzik, rip his arms off. Oh, you mean this key? So now they're inside. And meanwhile, Wesley still cannot walk on his own. He can't move. He can't do anything.
Right.
Humperdinck has told Buttercup that her love is dead, that they're not actually looking for him. She tells the king, okay, so now we have the marriage scene in which they're going to get married. He keeps making him go faster and faster because what's going on at the gate. And he finally says, just jump to man and wife. Say man and wife. And he goes, man and wife. And he says, that's it. We're married. And they leave. They're not married. They didn't do it. Nothing. She has the scene with the king where the king, you know, he says, you've always been so kind to me. And that's why I'm telling you that as soon as I get in my room, I'm killing myself. And the king's just out of it. What does he say? That's nice, dear. Oh, she kissed
won't
me.
That be nice.
Okay. Meanwhile, they're chasing after the Six-Finger Man because Six-Finger Man shows up. And he gets to say, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. And he runs off and he chases after him. And he's gets behind a door and he's trying to bang open the door. And he's like, Fezzik, please come. He's getting away. Fezzik puts down the man in black, goes, opens the door for him. And when he comes back, Wesley's gone.
He's gone. He must have crawled away.
And he goes now chasing after the Six-Finger Man for way too long. And then the Six-Finger Man throws a knife and stabs him in the gut and he's dead. The end.
Oh, no.
He's like, so you've been chasing me your whole life? And he said, yes. Oh, well, as soon as you're dead, I'm going to defile your corpse. What? I'm going to defile your corpse? You heard what I said. Most men die with a priapism. I'm going to utilize that. What? No.
Oh, man, I can't die now.
Not I knew like you were this. Evil, but I didn't know you were this evil.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile. Wesley has somehow made it into Buttercup's bed. She's about to stab herself in the boobies, and he says, "Don't do that. You have perfect boobies. They're all right. They're not great. We've never really seen the boobies." And I doubt he's seen her boobies. Don't stab them titties.
Please don't stab them titties, bitch.
She jumps on him, and she's like, "Go, Wesley." And he's like, "Yes, I'm here." And then Humperdinck shows up, and he's like, "Let's fight to the death." And Wesley says, "No, let's fight to the pain." What's the pain, Steve?
The pain is first you cut off your feet, then you get your hands cut off.
All right, I like that. Just at the feet, right? Okay, great.
No, more your hands. You cut your hands off.
All right, great. So I don't have any hands or feet, so I'm Stump Boy now. Okay, I get it. Let's fight to the stumps.
No, and then you cut out your tongue.
My tongue. How do I keep fighting after that's gone?
And then
do I keep fighting? Oh, my nose too? Okay.
Yeah. And then I cut your eyes out.
Oh, good golly. I don't know how you do that, but okay. Then
I'm going to do it.
All right, I believe you. What about my ears?
No, you keep your ears so that whenever people scream at you for being a fucking freak for the rest of your life, you can hear it.
Well, at least I'll still be rich. I'll still live in a castle, and I'll be able to tell my servants to bring any woman I want to suck my perfectly intact dick. You stupid idiot. I am a rich king. It doesn't matter what I look like. No matter. There are kings who have had leprosy that have gotten sex. That's all that matters to me. Loser, you can't win.
Whoops. I thought I had you.
And then he says, "You know what I think? I think you're too weak. I think you've been mostly dead all day. And I think you can't get up. And I think I'm going to kill you now. And while you die, you're going to watch me have sex with Buttercup. That's right. How about them apples?" And then Wesley stands up and he points his sword like it's going to shoot. Like he's holding a gun on him.
Yep.
"Drop your sword."
And he drops the sword and he says, "Sit down." And he grabs it and he sits down and they tie him up. And they're like, "Hooray!" Meanwhile, just as what's his name, Ruggan is undoing his codpiece,
won't be long now.
Inigo gets up and he goes, "My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepare to die." And he starts fighting him, and he keeps doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And then he gets the upper hand, and he stabs him a whole bunch of times, and he gives him the cuts on his face. This is my favorite scene in the whole world. He offered me money.
Oh, me too.
Offer me money, as much as you want.
Yes.
You know, what else? When he cuts the other cheek, he can't remember what he says. "Offer me whatever it is I want."
And he says, "Offer me anything I want." Yeah.
And then he stabs him and he says, and this is the most honest, this is why this is such a great scene. He says, "I want my father back, you son of a bitch." And he kills him.
Hooray! And he kills him.
And he is dead. He's very dead.
He ain't coming back.
And then everyone finds Princess Buttercup in her room, and they're like, "Oh!" And he nearly falls. Wesley nearly falls over, and he says, "Oh, he's been mostly dead all day." And Humperdinck's like, "I knew it."
Oh shit! I should have dropped my sword.
And then they hear outside, and Fezzik is there with four white horses. One horse looks extraordinarily scared, and he's like.
"Please don't make me do this.
Please don't let this happen." And they throw Buttercup out the window. They miss Fezzik altogether. Her back lands on one of the horse troughs. You hear an audible crack.
Whoops.
But she catches her. She's overjoyed to meet him. They've never met, so why not? And then... Sure. And then Wesley says, "I think you make a great Dead Pirate Roberts." And Inigo goes, "Yeah, that sounds great. We're friends forever." Dun, 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 dun. And they jump out the window and they ride off. And then we stop the thing because the grandpa says, "And then the rest is sex parts. And you don't want to hear that." And he's like, "I think
the
maybe
grandson says, no.
Let me hear all the sex parts. Don't spare anything. I want to hear about arcing ropes of chism. Grandpa, just tell me what happens. Tell me what happens." And then the grandpa reads the end about them kissing. And then he says, "Grandpa, can you come back here and read the story to me tomorrow?" And he says, "I got women tomorrow."
Tomorrow's no good. Tomorrow don't work for me. Sorry.
I die tonight. I took the pills right before. You ever seen Harold and Maude? Same thing. I don't want to live much longer.
I've got to pay for my crimes.
See this list? The last thing that I'm crossing off? Reed's story to grandson. I'm crossing it off. See the rest? kill a hobo? That was right before this. Kill a hobo was right on there.
I'm all done.
Kiss your father? That was on there. That one's done. He's still thinking about that one in the garage. He doesn't know what to make of it.
It was weird. It was weird.
Pop a parakeet in my mouth? Did that last week. Perfect. These are all the things that I wanted to do but never could. And now that I know I'm dying, bye-bye. So, you know, have someone else read it. Or read it yourself. Yeah. How about that?
You can read.
You can read, can't you, please? No, what does he say?
He says, as you wish.
Dun, 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 dun. Actually, it's the... dun, 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 dun. I hate this song.
The song's not great. Yeah,
it's not great.
It's leaving the theater music.
But it's over. Steve, how do you feel about probably the only romantic comedy that you and I are both gonna like ever?
Yes.
The Princess Bride. Bride.
Yeah, either one. I mean, I love this movie.
So do I.
I love this movie. And you know, I was thinking about what it is specifically that I like about it after I watched it. And there's so much confidence in this movie. And very few things impress me more than confidence shown while doing something incredibly difficult. And The Princess Bride just radiates confidence because this is the kind of movie where if you overthink this movie, it's dead. So the filmmakers, and especially Rob Reiner, the director, and William Goldman, the screenwriter, they just get on with it, you know, like they don't waste any more time setting anything up or explaining anything than they absolutely have to. The movie starts. We meet the kid. We meet the grandfather. He pulls out the book. He starts reading. We cut to the in the book story. We meet all the important characters. We establish the framing device of how the kid's going to interrupt every so often. And the grandpa's going to say something to him. And then we're going to go back into the story. That all happens within the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. We meet everybody. We get the gist of what this is going to be. We get the setup for the plot of the, you know, of the fairy tale story. Like it takes no time at all. And we're off and running. And that is not so easy to do, but this movie does it and makes it seem like effortless. And the whole movie's like that. The whole movie is a tightrope walk. And it succeeds because there's never a moment when you watch it that you're afraid it's going to fall off the tightrope because it's so confident. It knows exactly what it's doing. And it never even seems like it's going to falter. And it's a tightrope walk because it's a comedy that also wants you to invest in the characters as people. So it needs to make you laugh, but it also needs to get you to see the characters as people and to invest in, you know, and to care about what happens to them. And it works, and it does it without ever going over the top. It would have been so easy for this movie to just be like a cartoon, to just go super broad with the comedic bits. And then for the serious bits, for the romantic bits or the chivalrous bits or the heroic bits to get schmaltzy and maudlin. And it never does that. All of the main performances are good, but I want to focus on Mandy Patinkin as Inigo because it's my favorite performance in the movie. And I think when you understand why his performance works, you understand why the whole movie works. Mm-hmm. Because he's good for the same reason the whole movie is good. He's really, really funny. He's a character with like a dark, tragic past that is played as kind of a joke at first because it is a trope and the movie sort of makes fun of it, you know, and makes fun of all these fairy tale tropes. And, you know, because like despite the tragic past, Inigo, he describes himself as being in the revenge business. But like he seems mostly to be kind of an upbeat, witty guy. And like
He's a drunk.
But when Vicini tells him, you know, when he gets to the top of the cliff, you know, kill him, he seems like really excited that he gets to fight a duel because mm-hmm. you get the impression he doesn't get to do this very often. And this is like his skill. And he's like, I'm going to duel him left-handed. Like he seems really excited about the prospect of doing this. but he never goes too broad with it. And then they have this great sword fight, and which is exciting as an action scene, but is also funny because they're bantering the whole time. And then we get to later in the movie, and that tragic backstory that was kind of a joke now has to get serious because he catches up to the guy. He finds the man who killed his father. And they have that, then they have that great scene, which is a fight scene in a completely different way than his fight with the man in black was. And he never goes too maudlin with that. And like that camera is right in his face. Mandy Patinkin is, it's like the whole screen is his face. And he never overdoes it. He never does too much. He does just enough. And when he hits that line after he kills Rugen and he says, "I want my father back, you son of a bitch," like he delivers it completely straight, completely in earnest, and it lands just like it needs
because
to.
Up until that point, it's a joke. "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepare to die." It's kind of a joke. It's the over the top, you know, motivation for that character. But it doesn't feel real or realistic.
Right.
Or real. Until that scene, until he says, "I want my father back."
That scene feels very real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a fairy tale character at that point because he's someone who feels something that anybody in his situation would feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I miss my father. I want my father back. You took my father away. He's gone because of you. You ask me what I want. I want him back. Can you give him back? No. Well, guess what?
Guess what? You get to die now. Bye-bye.
You get to die now.
Bye-bye, dead man.
and the whole movie works on that level. When it needs to be funny, it's fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. And when it needs to hook you dramatically and emotionally, it hooks you. It's also an example of one of my favorite kind of movies, which is that it's a movie that is making fun of something while also being a great example of the thing it's making fun of. It makes fun of fairy tales, but it is a fairy tale. And it works super well on that level. It's kind of like Galaxy Quest is to like Star Trek sci-fi adventure movies. Like, yes, it's making fun of something, but it also is a very good example of the thing it's making fun of. So it's funny, it's self-aware, and ultimately it's dramatically satisfying. And it's a story about stories and about storytelling. This is a movie about characters who don't exist. Like even within the frame of the movie,
the conceit is that it's a story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They're not just fictional. They're super fictional. Like they're not even real in the context of their own movie. They're characters in a book, but we still care about them. We still get drawn in by them. You know, when Inigo gets that dagger in his stomach and you think he's not going to kill Count Rugen, you're like, oh no, you know, you don't think, who cares? This is all happening in the book. Like you care about what happens to Inigo. When Wesley bluffs Humperdinck, you know, with "drop your sword," like you don't think to yourself like, oh, well, this isn't really important. It's just how the story goes that the grandpa's reading to the kid. Like you buy into it in the moment. It means something. And that's the beauty and the power of storytelling and the art of storytelling. If you do it right, the fact that these people don't even exist within the world of their own story, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They become real in your imagination. And the movie makes that point without ever actually making it. It never draws attention to that. It just does it. And it shows you how it's done. And finally, it presents the telling of that story as an act of love. And because it's a grandfather sharing something with his grandson to make him feel better when he's sick. And as silly as this movie is, and as wacky and goofy and funny as it is, I'll be damned if that final "as you wish" from Peter Falk doesn't get to me.
It works.
It gets to me. It works every single time. And the first time I saw it, I had one of those moments where, yes, like it works beautifully as like a human emotional moment. It touches you just in your heart. But as a writer, you think, damn, that's good. Because it ties the frame story and the fairy tale together so beautifully.
It gives purpose to the frame story.
With one line, with one moment, it combines everything together into one thing. And that's the end of the movie, you know? And it's perfect. So yeah, I love this movie. I highly, highly recommend it. I find it hard to believe that anybody listening to this has not seen this movie, but if you haven't, I highly recommend it. But anyway,
may not
that's
be
all
everybody's cup of tea.
Well, maybe not.
You know,
anyway,
you know what
your
that's
turn.
Like, Steve.
Don't you? Yeah.
Don't
some
you?
People
you're
have
curmudgeon?
Shitty... Some people have shitty taste.
Yeah, I love this movie too. It was a movie, but I started to appreciate it more and more as I got older. The more I understood about writing, the more I understood how, wow, that was a great way to cinch this whole thing up. Because, I mean, here's the thing. They felt a need for a framing device, and so they gave it one. And the framing device was there in the story. It was based on a story told by somebody else to their, you know, he based only the good parts off of this book that he was read to as a child, and he created his own book called The Princess Bride. So it was like a high concept book to begin with. And so then he just kind of carried that over to the movie. And I think it's great. Now, you're not watching this movie for how great the special effects are. You're not watching this movie going, oh, wow, you know, the fight scene is great. Don't get me wrong. I think the fight scene is fantastic. But that's not the reason why you're watching it. You're not watching it because, oh, this is a great fight scene, or this is a great that. You're watching it because it's funny. That's the main thing. You're watching it because it's funny. And here's the thing. It's funny the way I like things to be funny. Character driven. There are winks at tropes, but they don't outright say them out loud.
No.
They don't say, oh, this is a joke about this. Don't you think that's funny? They don't do that. You're just laughing because you recognize the trope in the back of your head or whatever. This is the only kind of this story could only be told by someone who really, really loves fantasy. Steve would never be able to write this story. Sorry, Steve. You just
won't. I would never think to. I would never. It's not in my frame of reference. I would never want to write it.
Right. Unless you got really angry one day and you'll be, I'll show them. I'll show everyone.
Well, but see, but that's the thing. If I wrote it, I would probably.
Bitches.
If I wrote it, I would fall prey. And it would not be this movie, and it probably wouldn't be as good of a movie. I would want to be like, see how stupid this is?
Yeah, exactly.
This is stupid. This is so stupid.
That's the worst way to write a comedy. Yeah, it is.
And this movie never does that. It makes fun of the tropes without, you know, like demeaning them or mocking them.
When you write something and you say, this is how stupid it is, you wind up with Shrek.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And that's not what this is. This is someone who obviously appreciates those kinds of stories. And did it in such a way that it was accessible to everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you didn't like fantasy. Well, this technically isn't a fantasy movie. This is just a grandfather telling his grandson a story about something that happened. And then we get engaged with those characters, whether we like it or not. We know the conceit that this isn't a real thing. This is just a story that happens. But we still get involved with it. We still, you know, get involved with the characters, even though this is a story within a story. And ultimately, the framing device is Grandpa loves his grandson. Oh, that's so nice. Isn't that great? But it's not trying to actively teach you that. Okay. It's not, it doesn't have, there isn't a moral baked into this. Okay. This is, you wanted icing? Here's your icing. Isn't it great? This is the best icing you've ever eaten, isn't it? Yes, it is. There's not even cake. It's just icing. Isn't that fucking awesome? And there's nothing wrong with just icing so long as you entertain me, okay? So long as I'm entertained. Just like if you wear a scary mask while jerking me off, I'm getting jerk off, and so I'm happy.
Exactly. Do whatever you want at that point.
Do whatever you want at that point. Yippee. And at this point, what I appreciate are the characters, the storytelling, how they're subverting things within the story, and how this is like if the Wizard of Oz didn't have the framing device, it turns out it was a dream. They let us know up front, this isn't actually happening. This is a made-up book in this made-up world that these two people live in. And yet, because this is one of the reasons why I love storytelling, you still get caught up in it.
Yeah.
It's literally someone telling you this didn't really happen. One of the greatest things about human beings is their ability to be told to their face, this is bullshit, and you still get emotionally involved.
Absolutely.
That's one of my favorite things. It's why I love puppets so much. Put a puppet on your arm and puppet it to someone, and they start talking to the puppet, and they know, they watched you put on the puppet. They can see your mouth moving, but they're talking to the puppet.
They're talking to the puppet. Absolutely.
A human race's ability to believe in horse shit is a terrible and amazing thing.
But there does need to be some artistry to it. I mean, you know, then that to me, that's the real art of storytelling, is that whether it's a movie or a book or a stage performance. I mean, you know, I love stage magic. You know that, you know, you know that the magician didn't really solve the half. Like you know that there's a trick to it, that what you're seeing is not really happening. And yet, if skilled enough magician, if it's a clever enough setup, if it's a good enough performer, it doesn't matter. I've seen magic. I've seen David Copperfield fly on TV. I don't know how many times. I know exactly how he does it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the art of storytelling.
Yeah, I agree. Never interrupt me again.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, I just realized when you did, I said, wow, Steve, I don't think we've been doing this for nearly 11 years, and I don't think Steve has ever interrupted my part. And then you jump in and say, something important. I went, Jesus, the ball's on this guy. No, what are we going to say?
That's what Grandpa said to Fred Savage when he was reading it. Don't ever interrupt me again.
Never interrupt me again, and you're getting the stick. You got it? But no, that's what I love about the movie, is that is an important movie. Not really. Is it fun? Sure, it's a fun movie, and I enjoy it, and I think it's pure entertainment. Is it going to solve, you know, our nation's problems? No, not really. But, you know, it doesn't need to. It just needs to make us feel good.
Yeah.
And we laugh at it, and we appreciate certain things about it, and then it's over, and we can get on with our lives. We don't have to sit there and contemplate something. It's just fun. And you think about it the next time you read a story to your children, to your kid. It's not something Steve's ever going to experience, because he's dead inside. His the closest thing he has to children are the dead spirits of babies that are inside of his soul. That's it.
Oh, yeah. All the ejaculated sperm that never became children.
Yes, yes. There are multitudes on several socks everywhere, all lamenting that they never got a chance to exist.
Yes, my children. Yes, cry out to me.
Anyway, I loved it. Steve, you loved it?
I loved it. It's great.
Now, come up with something that you didn't like.
Well, here's the one I'm not recommending. And I think I'm pretty sure I have not recommended this one at least once before. I don't care. Every time I hear somebody say they like this movie, I die a little bit inside. It's, and I will not miss any opportunity to slander this film to the end of time, because it's a bullshit, shitty movie. And I don't care who thinks I'm wrong. I'm not recommending another Cary Elwes movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of his movies, unfortunately, is not nearly as good as
He doesn't have. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't get too many licks at the.
No. But I'm not recommending an absolutely wretched, completely laugh-free comedy called Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh God, again.
Every time I mention Robin Hood in one of my YouTube videos.
Uh-huh.
Because look, I understand. Like, I am a defender of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I think is arguably the worst.
Which Robin Hood. So I get it. Like, I've been there, right? I've been in that situation.
I know what it's like when everybody's against me.
When everybody's against you, right?
I don't get it. Why?
But if you like Robin Hood Men in Tights, I am against you. You are my enemy. because every time I bring up. Because every time I bring up Robin Hood, there's always someone in the comments, usually multiple someone's in the comments going, what about Men in Tights, though? What about Men in Tights? And I'm like, oh, you mean that movie that made me laugh zero times?
Please, I love it so much.
Zero times.
You've got to love it. What?
You have to like the same thing I like. But yeah, like I started, because I know I saw it when it first came out when I was a teenager, and I thought it was terrible. I didn't laugh a single time. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of forgot about it. And then within the last couple years, like I started noticing people that I knew online were like, Robin Hood Men in Tights is really funny. And I thought, well, maybe it's one of those things where like I saw it when I was a kid, and if I see it again as an adult, I'll look at it a different way, right? Mm-hmm. So I watched it again like a couple years ago. And it was exactly the same. I didn't laugh a single fucking time. It's one of the worst comedies I've ever seen. It's fucking terrible. And I'm a big fan of a lot of the people in it. I like Cary Elwes. I love Mel Brooks. I mean, Jesus Christ, Mel Brooks is a genius. It's one of the worst Mel Brooks. It would be the worst Mel Brooks movie if he hadn't then gone and done Dracula Dead and Loving It, like right after that.
You mean
which is even worse.
Movie.
which is even worse. His last movie. And hopefully that was a point where Mel himself probably said, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to rest on my laurels and let this, people will forget about this and they'll remember Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles and I'll be fine. Right. And yeah, it's just, it's a terrible, terrible movie. I don't understand why anyone finds any of it funny. There's not even a bit that even comes close to making me laugh. But so yeah, I'm not recommending Robin Hood Men in Tights. It's fucking dog shit. And if you like The Princess Bride, I would say maybe don't watch that one. So that's all.
Gotta put a lozenge in.
Oh, okay. Are you gonna do Jerry Lewis?
Yeah, I'm gonna do this. He's not sucking on a lozenge for the last time.
I know.
He's getting caraway seeds out of his goddamn dentures.
He's but just talk pretentiously about your films.
All right. So the movie that I'm not gonna recommend, as you know, came out the same year as this movie, and it wasn't hard to choose from. It stands out more than anything else. It's a great big goddamn splinter in your foot. It's leaking pus. It's bright red. Someone's got to pull it out. And that movie is Jaws the Revenge, where Ooh. This time the shark does everything but fucking talk. Does everything yes. but goddamn talk to the screen, going, I'm going to get you, wife of Brody. So it stars, what's her name? Elaine, what's her face? I don't know. I'm pretty sure this is her last thing she ever did. Mm-hmm. I think she had to go into hiding. She was an executive's wife. And they agree, let's do Jaws. Why not do Jaws 4? Whoever, they must have been so high. There must have been so many dead children around them from the Coke party they had over the weekend. And they finally said, I can do anything. Satan came up and says, here's Jaws 4. And you went, okay. And you signed it. And they decided to make it. And Jaws 4 is so fucking stupid that I am still in disbelief that someone thought, yeah, that's a good idea. There's still life in this dead monkey. Let's see what we can get out of it. And they, I don't, Steve, what in the hell could they have been thinking? When someone said, yeah, let's make Jaws 4.
Especially after Jaws 2 and 3. Like, don't forget, this is, it's not like, well, they did Jaws in 1975 and it was like the biggest movie
ever. And it
made
so much money. And oh boy.
And they just never made a sequel. And they finally come around in 87 and say, fuck it, let's try another Jaws. Like, you can kind of understand that, even though a lot of time has passed. But after Jaws 2 and 3, you have to think, why are we doing this again? Like, these aren't getting, they're not getting better. They're getting worse and they're making less money. Why are we doing this again?
That would be something normal that normal people would think, but no, they made Jaws. And thankfully, I think finally they went, let's not do this again. Can we not do this again?
We're done now, right?
We're done. We're good. And that's it. Don't see Jaws the Revenge unless you're really drunk and watching it with friends.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fun movie, but it's terrible. It's absolutely god awful, but it's fun to watch to laugh at and make fun of. Yeah,
it's fun to watch. You know, what's his name? Michael Caine regret every second.
Michael
that
Caine.
He decided to do the movie.
Michael Caine thinking to himself, maybe I shouldn't just say yes
I've
to everything.
I've just won an Oscar, and I'm in Jaws the Revenge. All right, Steve. Time for you to make a terrible choice. As you know, I make Steve make a terrible choice. He has A, B, or C to pick from. He doesn't know what the movies are, and now he gets to pick it. Hey, all of these are thrillers. And boy, oh boy, when I say which ones they are, you're going to go, wait, I guess they are all thrillers. Steve, Abba, Bibba, or Seba?
Give me Abba. I'll do A.
Okay, this is going to make some people happy. In our Patreon, because they've asked for this a couple of times, but you're going to be upset when I say what the other two are.
Okay, I can't wait to be upset.
Okay, you chosen B, you're going to hate yourself.
Go ahead.
Review the Harrison Ford thriller, The Fugitive.
Oh, I'm upset. I'm upset.
had you now get ready to scratch your head and then go, oh shit, that's right.
Okay.
Had you chosen C, we would have been very happily reviewing Blue Velvet.
Oh shit. Okay. Yeah.
It's a thriller.
Yeah, it is.
It's closer to a thriller than I don't know, which is what I think a lot of people want. I guess it's a thriller.
What is that?
I don't know. She came out naked and said he put his disease in her. I don't remember Lauren Bacall ever doing that with Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, shit.
Actually, I would have loved it. Bogey's outside of his hotel trying to hit on some dame. Lauren Bacall comes walking out naked with her arms out. He puts his disease in me. He just takes her face and pushes her to the ground.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. But you chose A.
Yes.
So the movie we're going to review is an international thriller thing about submarines. Oh, and is it true? It's not true. This never happened. But it could be true. No, stop saying that. It didn't happen. But we put in the front of the movie that it maybe it is. It didn't happen. Shut up. The movie we're going to review is actually one of my favorite. I haven't seen this in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Stars Alec Baldwin. Before he became really problematic and started killing people.
before he possibly killed someone on a set. Yeah.
And Sean Connery as a Russian dude.
There's brilliant casting.
Practically opened his door that doors to his quarters and playing bagpipes. What is it?
Who do we have for the Russian captain? Oh, the most Scottish guy ever.
Vodka, borscht, whatever. I'm Russian now. What we're going to review next is The Hunt for Red October. So if you want to get all the jokes, then please watch The Hunt for Red October before the next podcast drops. And that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. My name has been Jason. I have the flu. And thanks Steve for doing this on a different day because I was exhausted. Because I worked all weekend. I giving myself a pneumonia for you people. So there. Anyway,
blame the listeners.
That's right, listeners. This is all your fault. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This is Jason Redding, and go see a movie this week.
And this is Steve Shives. Jason, I don't mean to pry, but would you happen to have six fingers on your right hand?
On my right hand? No.
Do you have six fingers on your left hand?
No. I do have six fingers somewhere, though. Keep guessing.
Are you going to make me guess?
I'm going to give you a hint. I'm going to sit on your lap. And if you feel the pressure grip coming from my buttocks.
Well, I'm pretty sure you didn't kill my father, but I feel like we should fight anyway.
Very well. That's why I have two swords.
Oh, shit.
On guard, asshole. See, that's where it comes from.
I'm at you.
That's why everyone calls each other an asshole, because I fight with my ass, see? And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. And they go, oh, look at that asshole. I don't take it personally. That's what they're looking at.
No, it's they're describing what they're seeing. Yeah.
And the only old swordsman has to drop his pants in order to fight.
Hmm.
They're usually so distractive. That...
Yeah. I mean, your opponent's off balance, but then again, so are you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then people go, wow, look at that asshole. Just killed somebody. It's not inaccurate.
That's literally what just happened.
The hardest part was making a little hat with a feather on it to go on top of my butt. I wanted to say the Three Stooges so bad. How come the Three Stooges never made a Three Musketeers movie?
Oh, it's sitting right there. It's right there. It's sitting right there.
Because you know who they could all be. Who's the leader is not Porthos. It's Aramis.
Athos? Or Aramis. Athos. Yeah, Aramis. Yeah.
Aramis is.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because they're all based on three different, you know, thinking. It's James Kirk and Spock and McCoy. They're the three.
Right. It's they represent three different character types.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So, of course, Curly is going to be Porthos.
Of course
he is. Of course he is.
Of course.
Who else?
The lust for life guy. The, you know.
Shemp will be the man in the Iron Mask. Can you imagine the comedy hijinks of him just going around his cell trying to eat some soup with an iron mask on his head?
Oh, Shemp would be brilliant for that. Always walking into the wall.
Actually, now I want to go back in time and make this fucking thing.
I know, right? You could have all four Stooges in the same movie. And you know what? That would be so great. And good for Shemp. Shemp doesn't get his respect. Shemp is my favorite.
Shemp does
Stooge.
Not get nearly as much respect.
No.
You know? He let his brother go off and become famous, and then when he got sick, he stepped in. That's a brother. That's a mensch.
That's right.
We got to do one of their movies, but I don't think they made very many.
No, they mostly just did shorts.
Yeah, they stuck to what they were good at.
Yeah.
You know, and so they said, hey, you want to do it? Make a 2.5-hour movie? And they said, I don't think people could take us for 2.5 hours.
They said, let Laurel and Hardy do that shit. We're going to stick to the 10-minute ones. Okay?
Can we hurt ourselves enough just making a 10-minute short? Can we not? Right. Can we avoid dads, please?
Yeah. Do you think anybody's going to get invested in a story with us?
And if you think about it, the Three Stooges lasted a lot longer than the Marx Brothers.
Yes,
they both kind of started out at more or less the same time. The Marx Brothers ran their course. They made a certain number of movies, and then they kind of drifted away and didn't do anything until TV came along and Groucho took over TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. But they didn't really do anything past that point. The Stooges just kept going and going and going.
That's
and they hit television. They started doing TV until they started getting really old and you didn't want to watch them hurting each other anymore. You just, it started to get uncomfortable. Have Grandpa take off that wig and just, come on, do we have to watch them? Until they ran out of Shemp got sick, and then they had to find people.
The original Curly was gone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Curly Joe came in.
Ugh. What was it? Not Fred Besser.
Joe Besser.
Joe Besser, yeah. Curly Joe.
Yeah.
Who was, by the way, who was fucking hilarious on the Abbott and Costello show. Here you have a man in his 50s playing a little kid, this 4-year-old kid with the little Dutch boy outfit with the little Lord Fauntleroy outfit. Have I ever told you the funniest thing that I've ever seen ever is on the Abbott and Costello thing? So Lou and Bud are arguing, right? And Joe Besser, dressed up like this little kid, keeps walking back and forth with a cup of water. And Lou says, I can't remember his name, is Stinky. I think his name was Stinky or something like that. Stinky, why do you keep running back and forth? And he says, because I need water. And he comes walking back and he goes, what do you need water for? To put out the fire. All right, we're slipping into 1950s movies, 1950s TV. It's time for us to leave. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. I'm not waving this time because they can't see me, because this is just the podcast part. Late Seating is a Let Me Listen podcast production featuring Steve Shives and Jason Harding. Produced by Jason Harding. Theme music, Rollin' at 5, composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more Let Me Listen podcast productions at our website at www.letmelistenpodcast.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or just about anywhere you download podcasts. Late Seating is a listener-supported podcast. If you would like to support Late Seating or any of the other Let Me Listen productions for as little as $1 a month, please visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/letmelisten. And thanks for listening.